At Quite the Thing Media, we aim to bring you the best podcasts produced by independent creators, made without constraints.
This is Zach from the Neatcast and Effin' Cultured. Thanks for joining Podcast Father on his journey, sharing the great things that all sorts of creators are doing. He's the indie podcaster.
You've been searching for a podcast. Want to know about some great artist? Yeah. You've come to the right place. Indie Podcaster with your host, the Podcast Father.
Welcome to another month and another new episode of Indie Podcaster. I'm your host, Jeff, aka Podcast Father. With me today is Claire Santama. She is the 48 Hours producer and creator and host of Final Days on Earth podcast.
Thanks so much for having me, Jeff. Excited to be here.
How's it going down there in Texas? Is everything bigger?
It is bigger and hotter because it is the dead of summer.
You'd shut your air conditioner off and all that, right? Just to do this podcast?
Oh, no, I'm not quite that dedicated, but it is hopefully not going to be running too loud for us.
Last month, Mike Zago had his air conditioner off in his one-bedroom apartment and was dying as we recorded some intros. So you're not going to be doing the same thing then.
No, I'm sorry. I'm not that much of a martyr. Hats off to Mike for that. But yeah, I got the AC cranked.
Before we dive into this podcast we're going to talk about today, give you a second to talk about yours, even though, you know, a few episodes ago, we did do an episode on it, but there might be somebody listening that hasn't listened yet.
Yeah, The Life and Death of Damien Hirst is my first season of Final Days on Earth, and it's a 12-episode investigative series about a college wrestler who goes missing after a party, and his body is found 4 days later, and that's when the investigation begins.
Everybody, make sure you check it out. But moving on to today, we're going to talk about The Trail Went Cold. It is a podcast created and hosted by Robin Warder. Or have you got a chance to listen to this? I know I've been listening to it for several years.
Yeah, I thought it was fascinating. Robin does such a great job. He's so well-researched and goes in-depth into these missing persons cases. It's a really interesting listen.
And in this episode, in the interview, you're going to hear about how it all got started. But just a sneak peek into that, he's a huge Unsolved Mysteries fan. And that's what kind of sparked it all.
I feel like so many people in the true crime community grew up on Unsolved Mysteries. And it has totally been an influence for, you know, myself and so many yep. other people. It's fun to hear. I think we can, you know, I can picture like the intro to Unsolved Mysteries. Yep. And I mean, I have specific memories of certain episodes that really haunted me, but in the best way.
Absolutely. Can you do an impression of the original Unsolved Mysteries host?
Oh gosh, I don't know if I'm up for an impression, but I can totally picture him and like I felt like they had like smoke or like fog that would come
yeah.
in. You know,
outside, come in the back. Yeah, yeah, I know what you're talking
yes.
about. Yep.
When he did his intros, and it was always so creepy. I mean, I can totally remember being like, oh man, it's on. Let's do this.
Robin does a really good job with this podcast, and I'm excited to share this. But before we get into that, let me take care of a little business. Myself and this podcast are proud members of Quite the Thing Media. Make sure you're checking out Quite the Thing Media. Go to quitethethingmedia.com. If you want to go to my personal site, it's actually at Quite the Thing Media, quitethethingmedia.com/podcastfather. There you can request to be on this podcast as a guest. Also, a review from me on site. Make sure you're checking out all the great original podcasts on site and the independent creators on site, quitethethingmedia.com. Couldn't do this podcast without the hosting platform, Captivate FM. Captivate FM is great, guys. I can't tell you how great it is. I could talk about it all day, but I will tell you one thing. For me, as a new podcaster, it's amazing. There's all sorts of tools, growth labs, etc. The team is so hands-on at Captivate FM, they will help you through your journey. If you're a podcaster or content creator, you want to distribute your stuff, go to CaptivateFM.com. They'll go ahead and give you 7 free days off the bat, but I'll tell you what, if you go to my Quite the Thing Media page, quitethethingmedia.com/podcastfather, there at the bottom, you'll find an affiliate link. You can get 30 days of Captivate FM free. Why wouldn't you check it out? Captivate FM. This podcast is sponsored by Good Pods, my great friends at Good Pods. This is an amazing app, guys. You get on there, you see what podcast your friends and influencers are listening to. Download the Good Pods app. All the music on this podcast is from the artist Young Karts. Young Karts, great independent artist. You got to check out all the work. Go to the site, youngkartsbeats.com. If you want to contact me, you can find me on Twitter at @podcast_father, or the podcast actually has an account too, at @indie_podcaster, or good old fashioned email, always great too, thepodcastfather@gmail.com. You want to support this podcast? One great way you can do for me is you can go on to your favorite podcast listening platform, may that be an Apple or Good Pods, and give me a rating, throw me a 5-star, type some nice things to me. If you don't even want to type, don't worry about it. Just throw me some stars. Any feedback is appreciated. I really do appreciate it. If you want to get real crazy and support me, you can always buy me a coffee. Check it out on my Quite the Thing media page. That's enough for the business. Let's get to the view. Joining me today is Robin Warder from The Trail Went Cold. How you doing, Robin?
Very good. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. Well, thanks for coming on. Like I told you before, and like we were just talking, I've been listening to your podcast for quite a while, and you've been doing it for quite a while. We were talking about CrimeCon and how you went to the first one in 2017. Tell us about when you started this podcast and why you started it.
Well, it's funny. I started in early 2016 when there were nowhere near as many true crime podcasts then as there are now. And it originally had an idea that I was going to do a YouTube series instead, and I was going to call it the Unsolved Mysteries Fanatic. And myself and my editor, McGill Foote, he actually works as a professional editor, so he was very useful to help me with this project. The original idea was that I was going to stand in front of a camera like Robert Stack on Unsolved Mysteries, dressed in a trench coat, and I was going to analyze Unsolved Mysteries cases. I would talk about the facts, and we would show clips from the show. And I would give my own personal theories and analysis, pretty much like the format of The Trail Went Cold. And I think it was the summer of 2013, we filmed an episode and we uploaded it to YouTube. And it was there for about a half an hour before we got hit with a copyright strike from the company that runs Unsolved Mysteries because we were using their footage. So we were forced to take it down and we had to reevaluate. We thought, well, this is a really good idea. I think people will like this, but how can we do this? Without doing a visual format, because I don't know if anyone will want to watch me just sitting in front of a camera and talking for about an hour or so. And I think it was a couple hours later when we finally decided, why don't we do it as a podcast instead? We don't have to rely on visuals. I don't have to appear on a camera. I can just sit in my place and record everything in a microphone and you can assemble it together and then we'll release it. And I think it was about maybe 8 or 9 months The Trail Went Cold was out. It was featured in BuzzFeed at BuzzFeed.com. They were doing an article on 20 or 30 great true crime podcasts, and it pretty much launched us to another stratosphere. It opened up a whole new audience from people who had never heard of the show before, and they really seemed to like it. I always wondered myself, are people going to be interested in just hearing me talk for about a half hour to an hour about Unsolved Mysteries? And it turned out they did, and it became successful. And here we are 5 years later. Now I'm talking to you. So it worked out.
First of all, I would love to see that video and see what all you had going on. That would be amazing. Second of all, it sounds like, no, go ahead. What were you going to say?
Oh, it's funny. I actually have it as one as a bonus feature for my Patreon supporters, where if you sign up, we will show you the exclusive video because it's not something I would want to show just everybody because my delivery was pretty awkward. I was totally new at this sort of thing, but anyone who has signed up and seen it has got a huge laugh out of it.
Going back to 2016, it sounds like you really got in on this at a good time. Like you said, there weren't near as many what seems to be millions, and now I'm over-exaggerating. Well, maybe not. I don't know. Hell. Of a true crime podcast, you got in the game at the right time, right before it really podcasting in general started to take off as far as being recognized more widely.
I think so. And the interesting thing is that one of my big angles for The Trail Went Cold is that I would take cases that were featured on the TV show Unsolved Mysteries, but I would provide a more thorough analysis of them. I would provide information that was not available on the original broadcast. And in early 2016, you couldn't really watch the original series anywhere. If you tried to upload old episodes onto YouTube, they get pulled down. And I think it was only in early 2017 when the digital distribution rights were acquired by another company called FilmRise, and they started dropping all the original classic episodes of Unsolved Mysteries onto Amazon Prime and then eventually YouTube. And nowadays, you can just watch the entire original series, all 11, 12 seasons. But I think when we originally started in early 2016, we were kind of filling a void of some sort because people were nostalgic for the show. They wanted to learn more about these cases. And I think that's what drew them to The Trail Went Cold.
I think you're right. And obviously, the internet's been around for a while and people have been doing some form of podcasting long before that. But it almost is like during that time period, people really realized there was more out there as far as possibilities of information goes. And I would ask you what your inspiration was, but we've covered that. Talk to me more about how Unsolved Mysteries played into your younger, you know, I know a lot of people, it was my childhood, I remember it. Talk to us about that.
Well, it was my childhood too, because I originally started watching it in the late 1980s when it was originally airing. And at that time, I think I was more interested in a lot of the ghost and UFO and supernatural segments because I was a kid. And throughout the 90s, I was into that as well because that was the era of the X-Files and when aliens were really big. But as I got older, I got more and more interested in the true crime stories. And after the show went off the air, I started joining up for an Unsolved Mysteries forum to talk about some of the cases with other Unsolved Mysteries fans. And I realized that a lot of these cases that were shown on the show in the late 80s, early 90s, a lot of them are still unsolved to this day and have kind of been forgotten about. And that's back when it originally aired, there was no internet. So the only way to get new information about these cases were to watch the show and hope you would get an update. And that's when I started digging into more information about them on the internet and getting more of a clear picture of these cases. And that's kind of where I got the inspiration to start The Trail Went Cold, where I thought, well, a lot of these cases, you can only do 10 or 12 minutes to tell the entire story, but they don't get the big picture. And that's why I was kind of hoping to use the podcast for.
Oh, for sure. You have a lot more time there than they do on the television show. There's no doubt about that. Obviously, I was a big Unsolved Mysteries fan myself, but as far as a case goes, being from the West and when cable television really started getting big, you know, you're thinking the late 70s, early 80s. I always heard about the what's now, you know, Golden State Killer, East Area Rapist, original Night Stalker back then. It was so big in California when I went and visit a relative's house. I hadn't heard of it until then, but, you know, kind of things stayed localized then as far as cases go. But I heard about it when I went to a relative's house, and I was just so creeped out by it because I was young. Is there a case for you in particular in your area, because you're from Canada, obviously far away from where I am, that got you intrigued?
Not really in my area, because I grew up in Ontario, but there is one Canadian case that has stuck with me for over 30 years now. And that's the story of Cindy James, which took place in British Columbia during the 1980s. And I was introduced to it from Unsolved Mysteries, but it also got a lot of coverage in the Canadian media as well. And it involves a nurse who claimed that she was being stalked and harassed for about 6.5 years, where strange things would happen to her, like she would be attacked, said she was attacked in her home. There was one incident where she had a paring knife stuck into her hand, and other weird incidences where she was found in like a remote area, nearly frozen to death. But the cops would be watching her all this time. They would never see a suspect or a perpetrator. And lo and behold, whenever they took their surveillance off of her, the harassment would start up again. And they eventually got to the point where they thought she was staging the harassment herself. And she even got committed into a psychiatric institution for a time period, but they could never actually catch her in the act as well and prove that she was faking it. So no one really knew for sure. And then in June of 1989, she disappeared for a few weeks and was found inside a vacant lot. With her in a hogtie position with her arms behind her back, and she died by ingesting some morphine. And the cops were quick to write it off as a suicide, saying that she had staged the whole thing and overdosed. But of course, her family said that was not possible, saying how could she possibly hogtie herself and then drug herself? And they had a coroner's inquest, and they pretty much concluded that this is the words they use, she died of an unknown event, which pretty much solves nothing. And 30 years later, there have been no developments in the case. And I go back and forth on it all the time. I think one hand, there's evidence that she was the victim of foul play. But on the other hand, you look at it and you think it had to have been a suicide. But could she have really staged all these attacks on herself? And that just terrified me, because I don't know what's more creepy, the idea that you could be stalked and harassed for 6 years and no one believes you and no one can catch the perpetrator, or that you're just suffering from such mental problems that you're staging attacks on yourself. It just sounded like an absolute nightmare for her.
That definitely sounds like something that once you hear about it, when you're younger, especially, it's going to stick with you.
Yeah, definitely. And I covered it during one of my earliest episodes of The Trail Went Cold, and it has been covered on quite a few true crime podcasts, because true crime fans are just so baffled from it. And I've never seen a case where opinions are so sharply divided about what actually happened.
You bring up the people being intrigued by it. And for me, one way I discovered a lot of different true crime podcasts that I listen to, just by looking up for a case like that, looking by case, looking for more details. That's how I've come across a lot of different podcasts. It actually started with the Case Files. They went into a deep dive on the Golden State Killer, like all of the East Area rapist things. Then it just went to one case to another. And then next thing I know, I've found your podcast. I found other ones. So it's interesting that you say that. I guess I hadn't really thought about it, but if you do want information on a case, sometimes you search for it, and then true crime fans will continue to find more information that they desire.
Well, that's exactly, I think, a lot of people have found The Trail Went Cold, because when Unsolved Mysteries got re-released in 2017, there were a whole bunch of cases on there that hadn't been given any exposure in years. And I'm sure there were people who were learning about them for the first time. So they would Google some of the cases and then find out, hey, this was covered on The Trail Went Cold. Maybe I'll listen to this podcast to get more information. So I like to think we kind of complement each other very well.
No, I agree for sure. So what do you think about the new Unsolved Mysteries on Netflix? Have you watched any of those?
I have. I kind of have mixed feelings about it. There are episodes that I really enjoy, but I don't know if I agree with their decision to put one case per episode, which is different than the original format of Unsolved Mysteries, where they would have something like three or four cases per episode. I guess the best part is now they can devote maybe 45 minutes to an hour to one case, so you get more details and you learn more about the victims and their backstory. But they have also been accused of fudging the facts a little bit on certain cases in order to make them look more mysterious. The very first one on the first season is the strange death of a man named Ray Rivera, who mm-hmm. jumped off the roof of a hotel in Baltimore in 2006. And I remember the first time I tuned into that on Netflix, I was just blown away by it. I thought, wow, this is one of the most compelling mysteries I've seen in quite some time. I have no idea what happened. This is I just cannot come up with a logical explanation to explain it. But then I started delving deeper into it and found out that Unsolved Mysteries left a lot of information out. There was a book about the case published by an author named Nikita Brotman. And once you read it, I kind of was left to the conclusion that there was no foul play here, that Ray Rivera might have had some sort of undiagnosed mental illness and jumped off the roof himself. And that's the only explanation that makes sense. But I find that a lot of people who watch that automatically feel that he was murdered. And I know that his friend from the episode, Porter Stansberry, he's gotten a lot of death threats and hate mail in the past year because people just automatically think that he killed him. But then you find out deeper that he had an alibi that night and probably could not have been responsible. So I think that's been one of the issues now with the new Unsolved Mysteries, is that they're not exactly being honest a lot of the time in how they're presenting certain cases.
So what about you with The Trail Went Cold? You do present your opinion, but it's very, I don't want to say limited, but you are emotionally unopinionated, if that makes sense. And if you are, you don't spend much great time on it. You're a lot of factual information to a great extent. So how hard is it to keep the going down the rabbit hole of the opinion piece the whole time? Because I would struggle like heck doing a true crime podcast, keeping my opinion from being 3/4 of it.
Yes, I have a very specific format where the very first half of the episode, I give all the facts of the case and then try to save my opinions for the second half and the analysis. So If you just want to learn everything about the case, you can just listen to the first half. And if you don't want to hear my opinion, you can turn it off. But that's what a lot of people like, is that a lot of true crime podcasts just kind of share the facts and the story. But they want to also hear me break it down. Like, I won't always give my opinion about what I think happened. There's some where I really can't decide what happened because the case itself is so baffling. But I just like to break down the evidence and all the different scenarios and suspects. And if it seems pretty obvious what happened, then I will say so. But a lot of the time I will break it. I will just look at all the information, all the evidence, and even say to myself, I'm completely stumped. I have no idea what happened here. And there have been a few that I know of some off the record information about what happened in these cases, which I don't want to say on the podcast to jeopardize the investigation. But there are a few cases that I've covered where I have a pretty good idea what happened, but I can't really say.
And I guess that's what I was kind of talking about. Even on that second half, if you do have an opinion, it's very understanding how you get from point A to point B on it. There's nothing that'll ever just be kind of out there, thrown out there. And you definitely aren't drawing straws to get to any sort of opinionated conclusion.
Yeah, exactly. I'm the type of person who follows the evidence. I don't try to go with the whole thing where I start off with my own theory and then take the facts and the evidence and try to fit it together. I just kind of I just go where the trail leads me, if you'll excuse the pun, because I think that's the best approach to go. But a lot of these times I do not have any personal bias or personal stake in the case. So what you hear from me is generally what I really think.
You talked about how you got into starting this podcast. How many episodes or how long was it before you thought, because I know off the bat you had this idea that was intriguing because there was always more people wanting to know more information. But how long did it take before you thought, like, man, I'm really onto something here. This is kind of catching a little bit of fire.
I think one of my big turning points is it was one of the very few two-part episodes I ever did. And it was the controversial conviction of a man named Tommy Ziegler, who has been on death row for the past 45 years for a quadruple murder that took place in Christmas Eve in 1975, and continues to maintain that he is innocent. He's turning 76 years old this year, and his attorneys are still fighting to get him new DNA testing that they hope will exonerate him. Well, I started working on it and it became such a big case, much bigger than I expected. And after I completed part one, I decided to send a link to it over to the it's a Facebook page called Tommy Ziegler is Innocent, and it's run by his supporters. And I wound up being contacted by a woman named Lynn Marie Carty, who has worked as Tommy Ziegler's private investigator, trying to uncover evidence to exonerate him. And I kind of realized that I didn't have all the full facts of this case and that I should probably consult with her to get more information and make sure I get it out properly. And so I worked with her a little bit on part two, and I delayed the release of part two just to make sure all the information she gave me was accurate. And then I sent it a sneak preview to her early on, just before I released it, to make sure all the information was good and it was up to her taste. And she loved it. She said, wow, you really did justice to this case. I even cried at the end. And it's like, wow, if I'm impressing the people who have personal connections to this case, I must be doing something right. And then we released part two as well and went over really well with the listeners. And I think a lot of people to this day go back and say that they still think that it was one of my favorite episodes that I've ever released, and was one of the first times I realized I might not be too bad at this podcasting thing.
I do want to take another second here to talk about the sponsor of this podcast, Good Pods. Like I mentioned earlier in the intro, you can see what podcast your friends and influencers are listening to. This app is great, and the creators and team Good Pods are very serious about making you the greatest listening experience for a podcast. Not only just the quality of the audio listening piece, but also the social aspect. This is a really awesome app. I can't suggest it enough. I'm very involved in there. They're very dedicated to podcasters, independent podcasters, and listeners. I have a couple groups on there you should go check out. The Indie Podcasters group, highlight indie podcasters, obviously. I've also recently created a true crime group. I'm a big true crime fan. You should join both of those groups. And every week, we do pick podcasts out of the Indie Podcasters group to
to highlight in the recommended section. But once again, I'll say it again, the Good Pods team is a great team of people. I can personally vouch for them, but they're also dedicated to making this app as good as possible. You can talk to them on social media directly. They will respond. They take all recommendations very serious. There's a great team at Good Pods. Make sure you download the Good Pods app and listen to your podcast there. Let's get back to the interview.
How much time a week do you spend on research and preparation for the podcast?
I don't really calculate it a lot of the time, like how many hours. And I think sometimes it varies a bit. I think it depends on how well I know the case. Because there are some cases, if they were featured on Unsolved Mysteries and I've watched the segment several times, then I pretty much know the case by heart. So it's going to take me less time to research that and put together a script. So those ones I can do relatively quickly. But there are ones where I just go in completely from scratch, where sometimes I'll get a case request from a listener and I don't know anything about it. And then pretty much have to learn right from the very beginning all the different facts. And then once I do all the research, I try to assemble it together into a script and then record it. And that usually takes me considerably longer. When I'm planning out my schedule, that's kind of how I balance things, where I think, well, in this particular week, I'm probably going to be busy. So maybe I'll do a case that I'm already familiar with. Or and then say, well, but on this particular week, I'm doing a case I know nothing about. So maybe I should allow more time for that one. So I usually don't really calculate how many hours I work on each episode, but I try to plan things out so that I can still make my deadlines.
Well, you definitely have to have a good mixture of all of that, because I can't imagine just every week taking like listener requests and trying to start from scratch on a lot of cases that you know nothing about, like you said.
Yeah, and thankfully, I have my own editor, McGill, so I don't have to worry about any of the technical stuff, because my big strength is researching and writing. And I know many other podcasters, they do everything sometimes, where they write, research, record, and edit. But I'm really not very technically savvy people, so as long as I can rely on McGill to do the other stuff, I can just deep dive into the cases and only worry about that.
That is nice. I can use a McGill in my life.
Yes.
No, it is a lot more work, and it's a good thing that you can do that. But also, you definitely do need cases like that every once in a while, probably just to keep you fresh, and really part of you probably needs that to an extent. You wouldn't always want to do something that you're completely familiar with.
Exactly. What I did for my 5-year anniversary show, which was released last February, is that I covered another famous case from Unsolved Mysteries called the Boys on the Tracks case, about these two teenage boys who were found dead on a railway tracks in Arkansas in 1987. And that's pretty much one of the biggest rabbit holes ever featured in Unsolved Mysteries. And I was always too terrified to tackle it, because even though I know the case well, there is just so much information and conspiracy theories and rabbit holes surrounding that case that I finally said, okay, I'm going to save this for a special occasion. I'm going to do it for my 5-year anniversary one. And it wound up being a 2-part episode, but that was one that I had to prepare for it months in advance to know that I would be able to get this down on time for my deadline, because there's still some cases out there, like something maybe like the Zodiac case, where if I ever tackle that one, I would have to prepare myself, just because there is just so much material to sift through.
Yeah, that's for sure. That would be absolutely insane. You know, you have that, then BTK. There's a lot of true crime pods that go into multiple episodes for those kind of things. And you would definitely want to know all as much information as possible.
Exactly. Like I was even thinking about covering the Golden State Killer during my podcast early years before he wound up being caught. But I thought to myself, if I'm going to do that one, I'm going to need a lot of time to prepare for it.
Oh, yeah. And like I said earlier, I remember listening to the Case Files episodes. There were like 6 of them.
Mm-hmm.
And I was thinking the amount of time they had to put into this, you got to think of all the cases, you know, like 60, 70 cases that were discussed. I thought this took some serious time. So I assume that you have another career as well, right?
Yes, I work a day job here in Ottawa for Global Affairs Canada. And it's been kind of easy to do the balance now because of COVID, because I work from home now during the day, my day job, so I don't have to commute. So it's been easier to find a balance between doing my day job and working on the podcast. But I think it helps that working on the podcast, almost, even though it's a lot of hard work, it almost feels like a break from my regular day job because it's a subject that I have a lot of interest in. So it doesn't feel like work a lot of the time. But I know that is a tough balance sometimes to have to, because if you go into podcasting, you're not going to get rich straight away. You have to do it because you love it. Very, very few people get to the point where they start a podcast and then it becomes their full-time career, because you have to like really stand out and break through if you're going to make a living at it. So it's pretty much a labor of love.
Oh, you're right. So how long was it before everybody at work and around you started knowing you had a podcast?
Well, it's kind of funny. It's something that I didn't really spread about. I would just kind of like casually mention it if anyone asked. I think they first started finding out in 2017, where I took some time off to go to CrimeCon in Indianapolis, and they were asking me, what's CrimeCon? And it's kind of awkward trying to explain what a true crime podcast is when they have no interest in the subject. Because I always start off, have you heard of the podcast Serial? Which was like a worldwide phenomenon.
Yeah.
When they say no, I know that I have an uphill battle trying to explain the whole concept. And I know the same thing happened when I went to CrimeCon and I was talking about guests who were going to be there. And it says, have you heard of Nancy Grace? And some of them said no. And it's like, oh boy, how am I going to explain this whole concept? But I have had a couple of my coworkers, though, who have started listening to my podcast and told me they enjoyed it. And there was a funny thing last year where I did a Zoom meeting talking about work-related stuff. And one of my coworkers said, I've been listening to your podcast for a while, and it's so weird hearing your voice talking about mundane work-related stuff now after hearing you talk about murders and unsolved mysteries. So it's kind of now a running gag now that I'm like a government worker by day and a true crime podcaster by night.
A lot of podcasters have that distinct voice. Not myself. I feel like my voice is kind of lame, but you talk to, like, you have yours, then somebody like Captain from True Crime Garage. They're definitely identifiable voices. And I imagine that would be weird, like, especially if they didn't know, then they just heard your voice. And I wonder if they could connect those dots. That's funny.
That's one of the funniest things about CrimeCon. Like, the first year I went, all the podcasters were in this one area called Podcast Row. And it was my first time meeting all these podcasters in person. Like, I communicated with them over the past year, but now I was in a room with about 30 voices I've recognized, and I was now connecting them to faces for the first time. But it was such a surreal feeling because I met the crew from Generation Y and Thinking Sideways for the first time. I'd been listening to them for years, and now I was hearing their voices come out of faces for the first time. And that's even happened to me a few times at CrimeCon, where people will overhear me talk in public and then kind of do a double take. Like, I recognize that voice. Is that Robin Warder from The Trail Went Cold?
I'm just going to have to like invite myself along the way sometime just to experience that, because that does sound crazy. Just putting all those voices that you've been hearing to faces. That just, you know, faces, voices. That sounds crazy. So what are some other podcasts that, as you were climbing through the ranks, you communicated with, and they kind of, you know, helped you along the way?
Thinking Sideways, they're no longer around, unfortunately, but they were hosted by a trio named Joe, Steve, and Devin. They were kind of a comedy podcast, but they totally piqued my interest because they talked a lot about unsolved mysteries. And it was kind of funny. They did an episode once where I used to do freelance writing for crack.com, where I would sometimes write mystery related articles for them. And they read some text from one of my articles on one of their episodes. And I decided to contact them and say, hi, we've never met, but I'm Robin Warder. I have just recently started my own true crime podcast, and you guys are some of my biggest inspirations. You're one of the podcasts that inspired me to start one of my own. And they were always very nice and supportive. And then I finally got to meet them in person at CrimeCon 2017, and they became my friends. And it was just so cool to finally become friends with the people who inspired you. And another example was Generation Y. Like, they were doing true crime podcasts before pretty much everyone else. But once I finally met Justin and Aaron at CrimeCon, I became friends with them. And only within the past few months, Justin actually took a week off, and I got to be Aaron's guest co-host for an episode of Generation Y, where we talked about a wrongful conviction case. And it still didn't really hit me that this is one of the podcasts that inspired me to start out, and now I'm co-hosting one of their episodes. It's just a pretty surreal feeling, kind of like I'm living the dream.
For sure. talk to me more about your audience. It seems like your audience is very engaged. That is absolutely critical as a podcaster to kind of, you start out as a podcaster to get to that next level. You have to get some engagement from your audience, and you have that. How long did that really take to get that engagement? And what advice do you have for people to try to gain that? I know a lot of it's got to come naturally.
Well, mine was pretty unique because in my early days, I was just trying to spread word about my podcast anywhere I could. But in the years prior to me starting, I spent a lot of time on this subreddit on Reddit called the Unresolved Mystery subreddit, where people would write big summaries about unsolved cold cases and have lengthy discussions for them. And I started off there. I started writing some posts where I was mentioning the case and I would plug my podcast episode, and they got in touch with me saying, we don't really like self-promotion a lot of the time, where people just make posts to plug their blogs or their podcasts. So I kind of came up with a compromise. Okay, how about I write a post where I go in depth to the case that I cover on The Trail Went Cold, where I just write a lot of the details, and then just put a link to my podcast episode at the bottom. So if people want to listen to the episode, they can click on it. But if they don't, at least now that I've written a summary of the case, it will have a lot of interactive discussion. And they were fine with that. So that's what I started doing every week, is I would release a new episode, and then I would write a summary of the case from each episode, and then put a little plug at the bottom. And I would engage with a lot of the commenters. Like, they would write lines like asking me questions about the case, wanting clarifications. And that's when I started hearing compliments from people in the comment section saying, hey, I really like your podcast. So I found out that I might be doing something right here. And that's what I've always done. I've always stayed engaged. I have a Facebook discussion group where I'm often engaging with my listeners, and I'm often engaging on Twitter. And I think that's kind of what you really need to do when you're starting out. I mean, it's a lot more difficult to do today because there are just so many podcasts out there. But I think the best thing to do is, if you're wanting to plug your podcast, don't just look like you're doing like an obnoxious plug. Like, try to have conversations with the people that you're trying to sell your show to and stuff, and engage and try to develop relationships so that it doesn't sound like you're using them for their downloads.
Yeah. May not like that on Twitter. I mean, they may not like that on Reddit, but that is a huge thing with Twitter.
Yeah. That's what I thought, that they don't like it if you just butt into people's conversations and say, hey, while you're talking about it, I have a podcast, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. And the engagement piece is hard to get to, like you said, with especially so many podcasts that there are. Do you have a lot of true crime indie podcasters maybe that are just starting out that reach out to you and try to get advice?
Oh, yes, all the time. And another thing that indie podcasts do to help themselves is play promos for each other's shows on each other's podcast. And that's happened to me a lot, where someone is starting out a podcast and they say, I'm trying to spread the word, would it be okay if I play your promo on your show? And all the time I say yes. And at the end of my Trail Went Cold episode, I will play an audio file with their promo and hopefully open them up to a new audience. But yeah, I have a lot of people ask me advice because I've been around for a while, and I'm always open to anybody who asks me.
And that's the reason why I really wanted to have this interview, because you are one of those people that you've got 5 years in on it now, and you are a valuable resource to people starting out. But it is challenging with there are so many different true crime podcasts. I can't imagine how difficult it would be to just do something so specific. Some of them are very down to the exact detail of what they're going to discuss. If you can find the audience for that, then you could really be onto something.
Exactly. And I always tell people now that if you're going to start a true crime podcast, try to find a topic that has not been covered to death. Try to do something new. Like, don't just start a new podcast and do a bunch of episodes on, say, Ted Bundy, because that one has been done to death and you're probably not going to offer anything new. But if you can find a case that has not gotten a lot of coverage, or you can find a new take on a case that people haven't heard before, then that's a good way that you're going to potentially grow your audience. And another piece of advice I always give is, now try to be as polished as possible when you're starting out, because every podcaster will tell you that they're pretty rough when they start their first episodes. And we'll go back and listen to their earliest ones and just cringe at how bad they sounded, myself included. But I think now, because the field is so crowded, it's probably better to polish your show more and get a lot more practice before you drop your first episode. Because if someone listens to your earliest episodes and they don't like it, well, there's plenty of other fish in the sea and they can just move on. Whereas back in 2016, people were maybe a bit more forgiving and were willing to stick it out with me in spite of my rough patches early on.
Oh, I will always go through rough patches. I actually had somebody tell me that I was amazing at doing interviews. I'm like, I can hardly even talk. They're like, that's what makes it good, Jeff. I'm like, what? As long as it works for you, then I'm happy. That's what I'm going for. I'm definitely not the most well-spoken. I'm not going to win any prizes for the way I conduct an interview. But oh well.
Well, that's what people like about indie podcasts, is how real and natural they are. They don't just feel like a product of something like that. They like the authenticity to it. So I think that's probably a good thing, is that they listen to interviewers who might not be polished, but they're more laid back and easier to identify with.
One thing that we haven't talked about is you're actually involved in some other things outside of just The Trail Went Cold.
Yes, I actually have a spinoff podcast right now called The Path Went Chilly. It's kind of funny, the whole, I'll tell you the story about the name in a second, but how it came about is, I think you've interacted with her before, but Jules, she hosts a podcast called Riddle Me That, and she's a fellow Canadian like me. She's living in Malaysia right now, and I think she launched in the summer of 2020. And we got connected early on because we did a promo exchange when she was just starting out her show. I ran her promo for Riddle Me That on The Trail Went Cold. And as time went on, she invited me to be a guest on her show alongside one of her frequent collaborators, a criminologist named Dr. Ashley Wellman. And we had in-depth discussions about quite a few cases and finally came to the point saying, we have so much chemistry. Why don't we kind of do our own spinoff podcast where we talk about cases you've already covered on The Trail Went Cold, but we'll go into more in-depth discussions about them. We'll kind of expand things a bit and get different point of views from two other co-hosts. And we thought long and hard about what new name we can come up with. And there was kind of a running gag a couple years ago where I made a post in a podcasting forum how if someone ever tried to rip off The Trail Went Cold, they would probably call it The Path Went Chilly. And then I shared that title with Jules and she said, hey, I like that title. Maybe we should use it. And she even got feedback from other podcasters. And I was like, okay, it sounds silly, but before someone else rips it off, maybe we should use it ourselves. And then it got launched. So I like to call this show almost like The Trail Went Cold Director's Cut, where you hear me discuss cases I already covered on The Trail Went Cold, but you now get to hear me discuss them with other people. And what's also interesting is that some of these cases, I did them on my show 4 or 5 years ago, and I might have a different opinion about the cases now, and I might be looking at them in a different light. So I think it's kind of a good opportunity to revisit them on The Path Went Chilly.
Definitely. And Jules, and you talk about Riddle Me That, I branched off of that from your podcast, The Trail Went Cold. So definitely good services done there, and she does a great, great job.
Yeah, she really reaches out and gets involved with a lot of podcasters and other people who are involved in the true crime community. She's recording like multiple shows per week. I just kind of look at her output and all the work she does. And I'm overwhelmed. Like, how do you keep up with all this, keeping track of all these different shows? But she does it well.
You all play a different role, have your own role on that podcast. That probably helps, because you couldn't have two podcasts like yours. That would be very challenging. So it's got to be nice to, when you go into The Path Went Chilly, all the different variables and everything you guys bring to the table probably makes it enjoyable.
Yes, it's kind of a nice, well-oiled machine, because I was the one who originally researched and wrote about these cases. And Jules, she does a lot of preparation beforehand before she records to familiarize herself with these cases. But Ashley deliberately keeps herself in the dark. She has virtually no knowledges of these cases while we're discussing them. So a lot of the reactions she gives off are genuine. And sometimes she'll hear stuff that genuinely shocks her and leaves her speechless. And then she'll offer her input because she's a criminologist. So she's worked on cold cases before. So it's kind of a nice, interesting combination with the three of us. And what's also funny is that we're recording from three different countries because I'm in Canada, Jules is in Malaysia, and Ashley is in the United States. And we're all in different time zones. And it's usually like 7 or 8 a.m. in the morning in Malaysia when Jules is recording. So I don't know if there are any other podcasts out there like this where it has three different hosts recording from three different countries at the same time.
It's awesome podcast, and I do suggest it to everybody. It really, it is neat. And like you said, the oblivious part is really what makes it great, because you get those raw emotions from her.
Exactly. And that's one of my favorite parts in anticipating this is if it's a case that I know front to back and it has some really weird elements, I think to myself, how is Ashley going to react when she hears this for the first time? And more often than not, it's usually shock.
For sure. So talk about some upcoming, what you've really been set on what you're doing now for a while. Do you have any goals or milestones upcoming that you're really looking at?
Well, I'm hoping to go to CrimeCon UK in September of this year. It's the very first CrimeCon event that they're holding in the United Kingdom. It's supposed to happen on the last weekend of September in London. And I was supposed to go to CrimeCon in Austin this year, but the Canada-United States border is still closed, so I couldn't make it. But I think, hopefully, travel will be safe enough that I'll be able to go over there. And it'll mark the first time I've been to the United Kingdom since I was a kid, because I have relatives there and I used to travel there, but I haven't been there since the 1980s. So I'm really looking forward to going back and meeting a lot of UK podcasters for the first time, because I've listened to quite a few great shows that are produced over there, but I've yet to meet the creators in person. So it's going to be another surreal experience where I'm going into a room filled with voices that are like British or Scottish or Irish that I've heard, and matching them to faces for the first time.
How much crime is too much crime for you? Do you ever have problems turning this off and kind of escaping it? Because I imagine as much research as you've done and you do, it could wear on you if you weren't careful.
It does. Yeah. I'm always weary of that. I haven't really reached the point where I thought this is too overwhelming. I need to take a break. But I think it helps that I'm kind of looking at it from an unbiased, neutral observer. But it is kind of been humbling sometimes, because there are been a few cases I've covered where I've had to interact with the victims' families and consult with them. And it just is a good reminder that these are real people. You're telling the real stories, and that real people have suffered from these events. So you have to tell the stories as respectfully as possible. And I often interact with a lot of people who just, I think what's great about podcasts is that they can be an outlet for people who have not been able to find the proper assistance for law enforcement, or they've been unable to get any exposure in the media for their loved ones' cases. Because a lot of the time, podcasters are independent. They don't have to answer to anybody. So if someone contacts you saying that I want you to feature my loved one's case, I can't get any media outlets to cover it, you can just decide to do so yourself and give them exposure that they otherwise would not ever receive. And we've actually seen this work out several times where cases that have been covered on podcasts have wound up being solved as a large result of the exposure that the podcast provided for it.
I'm sure even a thank you from the victim's family would just be unimaginably incredible feeling.
Exactly. Like, there are some cases where I never got in touch with the victim's family because I wouldn't have known how to contact them. But they did contact me after the fact, after I released the episode, and said, thank you for remembering their story and covering it so respectfully. And any exposure helps. And there's always the chance that the right person could be listening to my podcast episode and use it as motivation to come forward with information they have and possibly lead to a resolution.
Robin, you've done a hell of a job with your podcast over the years. We talked about passing that 5-year mark, which is incredible, because a lot of podcasts don't make it, 5 episodes, 5 months, whatever you want to call it. What advice would you give to content creators starting out, whether it be a podcast or YouTube or whatever they wanted to do?
Well, make sure that you love what you're doing, that you really enjoy what you're doing, because you're not going to get a lot of money or income or fame from it right away. You just have to work hard at it, and hopefully you will wind up finding a larger audience. And of course, like, use the platform to do some good, because if you're going to cover some crimes, make sure you do so respectfully, and keep in mind that the victim's family could be listening, and you want to... And you could potentially upset them if you don't cover their story in a respectful light. And I also just advise, try to, if you really want to stand out and do a true crime podcast, try to cover crimes that haven't been covered a lot, and try to present something that listeners have never seen before. Like, maybe present stories that are obscure, they're not familiar with, and hopefully it will help you stand out from the pack.
Last question for you. What are some other untrue crime related types of podcasts that you enjoy?
I actually listen to pro wrestling podcasts quite a bit, and you're a wrestling fan, aren't you?
Oh yeah. Yes, I am.
Yes. Yeah. That's cool to know, because I grew up in Orangeville, Ontario, which is actually the hometown of Edge and Christian, who are very successful wrestlers for WWE. So I've been watching it since childhood. And I like to listen to wrestling podcasts quite a bit, like Jim Cornette, just to hear them tell stories about the wrestling business. I mean, I don't have a lot of time to listen to podcasts, but that's one subject that I will take some time to listen to. And I'm also a big film buff, so I will sometimes listen to podcasts like We Hate Movies. So, yeah, I do have a wide variety of interests.
I think we just became best friends.
Yes, exactly. I kind of figured you were a wrestling fan when you sent me that gif on Twitter the other day of Paul Orndorff kissing his biceps.
That's one of my favorites. It was like when I saw that you posted that, I was like, oh, I got to share it. I try to share that whenever I get the opportunity to.
Yes, that's awesome. From the old Land of a Thousand Dances music video from the 80s. I grew up watching that stuff.
Well, that makes me a little bit happier knowing all that. I do appreciate you taking the time to do this interview with me. And I think I've had a really good mix of the type of people that I've been interviewing. And yourself, you're just a really good resource and a good story for people that are starting out or people that have been in it for a while. You're a very reasonable person, and you're a good resource, and you work with people when they need something. That's incredibly nice of you.
Thank you very much. Yes, I always say that to podcasters. If you ever need advice or you need me to play your promo on your podcast, do not hesitate to reach out. I'm always there and glad to help you.
Oh, I can arrange that, and so can everybody else, man. Seriously though, thanks again, and we'll keep in touch.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Really do appreciate you listening to this episode and checking it out. I hope you continue to do so with the next. I hope you have an appreciation for what I'm trying to do here. Highlight all the different things all sorts of different creators are doing. I hope you get behind me on that and continue to join me on my journey. I'm Podcast Father, the Indie Podcaster. See you next time.